Now when Festus was come into the province after 3 days, he ascended from Caesarea to Jerusalem. Then the high priest and the chief of the Jews informed him against Paul and besought him, and desired favor against him that he would send for him to Jerusalem, laying wait in the way to kill him. But Festus answered that Paul should be kept at Caesarea, and that he himself would depart shortly thither. Let them therefore, said he, which among you are able, go down with me and accuse this man, if there be any wickedness in him. And when he had tarried among them more than 10 days, he went down into Caesarea, and the next day, sitting on the judgment seat, commanded Paul to be brought. And when he was come, the Jews which came down from Jerusalem stood round about, and laid many and grievous complaints against Paul, which they could not prove. While he answered for himself, neither against the law of the Jews, neither against the temple, nor yet against Caesar, have I offended anything at all. But Festus, willing to do the Jews a pleasure, answered Paul and said, wilt thou go up to Jerusalem, and there be judged of these things before me? Then said Paul, I stand at Caesar's judgment seat, where I ought to be judged. To the Jews have I done no wrong, as thou very well knowest. For if I be an offender, or have committed anything worthy of death, I refuse not to die. But if there be none of those things whereof these accuse me, no man may deliver me unto them. I appeal unto Caesar. Then Festus, when he had conferred with the council, answered, hast thou appealed unto Caesar? Unto Caesar shalt thou go. Chapter 24 focused on Paul's time in Caesarea with the governor Felix. The high priest and elders from Jerusalem came to Caesarea to accuse him, and Paul there spoke in his own defense. But the Jews failed to establish any clear charges against Paul. Now, Felix also went on to have various discussions with Paul because he wanted to know, first of all, more about what Paul was teaching, but also that he hoped to be paid a bribe in order to secure Paul's release. But in the end, Felix left Paul as a prisoner for 2 years, hoping to gain some favor with the Jews by doing so. And his governorship came to an end with Paul still imprisoned. Now, chapter 25 opens with Festus. Festus is the new governor, and Paul is still imprisoned in Caesarea. The Jewish leaders try once again to have Paul brought to Jerusalem. The narrator tells us that they want to kill him, and they seem to have abandoned any hope or pretense of proceeding legally. Festus does not grant that, but he does later try to in order to gain favor with the Jews. And then the second trial ends with Paul's appeal to Caesar. So we want to look at this passage in two main parts, verses 1 to 5, where Festus is in Jerusalem and the Jews accuse Paul there, and in verses 6 to 12, when Paul is tried once again in Caesarea. So let's begin looking with verse number 1. Now when Festus was come into the province after 3 days, he ascended from Caesarea to Jerusalem. So Festus was the one who succeeded Felix in the office of the governor. This is the governorship of the province of Judea. Little is known about Festus in history. It seems that he took office as governor in Judea somewhere around 59 or 60 AD, and he died about 2 years after taking office. Now, from the account, we realize that a new governor has changed little about Paul's situation. Festus' motives are like those of Felix before him. He's motivated by political power and political concerns. He has to answer to Rome, and in fact, as I understand it, this governorship would have answered directly to the emperor in Rome, which was Nero at this time. So he has to answer to Rome for the things that go on within his jurisdiction, but he also has to answer in some ways to the Jews, because the Jews have at least some measure of independence, so they're not an independent state under Rome, but they do have some allowance of self-governance, so they do have some authority, and he has to be concerned about his relations with them as well. Now, we do see that as a new governor, he acted very quickly to go and to visit Jerusalem. It said that when he came into the province, and after 3 days, he ascended from Caesarea to Jerusalem. So the governorship of Judea obviously required good relations with the Jews. Judea was a province that included Jerusalem, the city of Jerusalem, obviously. Judea was a province that was a part of the larger province of Syria. And historically, it was a difficult province for the Roman Empire to govern and to maintain peace and order. So a good relationship with the Jewish leaders in Jerusalem was essential for the one that was governor in Caesarea. The Jews in Jerusalem played a key role in maintaining order among the Jewish population throughout the province. So obviously, very quickly, Festus wants to go to establish good relations. Obviously, he's going to survey the situation there in Jerusalem. No doubt he's going to meet with the commander that is there, the Roman commander that is stationed there. All of those sort of things he's going to want to take care of as he takes over this new governorship. Now, in verse number 2, then the high priest and the chief of the Jews informed him against Paul and besought him. So during his visit to Jerusalem, the Jewish leaders there accused Paul before the new governor, Festus. Now, as I understand it historically, a new high priest was appointed in AD 59. So around the same time that Festus would have become the governor over Judea. So Ananias was no longer the high priest. Ananias was the one that went to Caesarea to accuse Paul before Felix. But Ananias is not the high priest now. He has been replaced. And the reference to the chief of the Jews refers to what is sometimes is referred to as the chief priest. These would be the leading members of the priestly families within Jerusalem. And it says that they informed him against Paul. In other words, the high priest and the chief priest, they do have legal standing among the Jews there in Jerusalem. In fact, they represent the highest level of authority among the Jewish population. So they are informing, and that word means to exhibit. And they are making formal charges against Paul to the new governor. So they are essentially renewing their case against Paul to Festus. And the term that's used here for besought implies that it was a strong request. They are imploring him to have Paul brought to Jerusalem. Perhaps we could say that they were coming near to begging the new governor to have Paul brought. Verse number 3. And desired favor against him, that he would send for him to Jerusalem, laying wait in the way to kill him. So they acknowledge that they're asking for a favor from Festus. Possibly this has political overtones, but they weren't being heavy-handed. In other words, they weren't delivering any sort of ultimatum to Festus. But they know, as well as Festus does, that relations between the authorities in the Roman Empire and the province and the Jewish leaders is very important to maintaining the peace and order throughout the province. They know that. So I'm not saying that they're making any sort of ultimatum toward Festus, but they are asking for a favor. In other words, it would go a long way to putting Festus in good standing with the leadership of the Jews if they will grant this favor to them. Now, they were requesting this under the guise of having Paul brought to Jerusalem, transferred there in order to be tried in Jerusalem. Now, they had restated their case against him in an effort to get this trial. But Luke also notes for us at the end of this verse that they were laying in wait to kill him. In other words, they had requested this transfer under the guise of having a new trial for Paul, but they were planning to kill him while he was on the way. Now, it's not clear how this was known, but it is essentially the same plot from 2 years earlier. You remember that 2 years earlier, they were going to request that Paul be transferred, brought down from the fortress there, and brought down to the Council of the Sanhedrin. And en route, there were some Jews that had taken an oath upon themselves that they were not going to eat or drink until they had killed Paul. They're going to waylay him and ambush on the way. So essentially, this is the same plot. Now, it's not clear whether this developed the same way. In other words, was it some members of the Jews that saw this as an opportunity perhaps to put this plot into action again? Or maybe it was the Jewish leaders who themselves were the instigators this time. And it seems that we could safely take that away. But either way, it emphasizes once again the danger posed to Paul in Jerusalem. It's not a safe place for Paul to go. For one, he cannot even hope to have any sort of a fair trial before the Council of the Sanhedrin in Jerusalem. And not only that, he can't even hope to be able to have any sort of a safe conduct from Caesarea to Jerusalem, that he would actually arrive there without being killed on the way. Verse number 4. But Festus answered that Paul should be kept at Caesarea, and that he himself would depart shortly thither. Now, all the records of Paul's case would have been available to Festus, though he had just come into the governorship. How well informed that Festus was about Paul's case is just not known. But he does here deny the request to transfer Paul. And he says that he's going to go to Caesarea shortly. And that gives the implication that he wanted to talk to Paul, or maybe he wanted to become more acquainted with the facts before he makes any sort of a decision relevant to this case. Furthermore, he says that Paul is being kept at Caesarea. Caesarea was the capital of the Roman province of Judea. And since Paul was a Roman citizen, and the Jews had not successfully proven any complaint of any sort of crime against the Jews, then as a Roman citizen, that would be the place that Paul should be tried. Now, there would have to have been a sufficient legal reason to transfer him to Jerusalem. Whether or not Festus was trying to communicate that to them is not clear, but it certainly, there would have had to have been legal grounds to have transferred a Roman citizen to Jerusalem to be tried at the hands of the Jews. Verse 5. Let them therefore, said he, which among you are able, go down with me and accuse this man if there be any wickedness in him. So Festus here counters with the offer for the Jews to go to Caesarea and to accuse Paul there. Now, this does not amount to a summons. They weren't being summoned to go to Caesarea as if they were under an obligation that they had to go. But this is an opportunity that he is offering them. It's an opportunity for the Jews also to consider their case against Paul and whether they have any proper legal complaint against him. In other words, for Festus to do anything with Paul, they're going to have to bring a proper legal charge against Paul according to terms of Roman law. Now, the word that he uses for able here is a word that could indicate ability if they just have the strength, if they have the wherewithal to be able to make this trip. But it's also a word that does indicate power, and it could be a reference to authority, and that seems very likely. In other words, Festus is giving this as an opportunity for the proper Jewish authorities to come to Caesarea and to make a case against Paul. At this point, Festus has demonstrated concern for proper legal procedure. Again, he doesn't seem to have any particular affinity for Paul. And in fact, if he is going to try to appeal to anyone in the case, it's going to be the Jews more than it would be Paul, and perhaps even the Roman Empire. So Festus has demonstrated concern for legal procedure, but really that works in Paul's favor. Now we get to the next part of this where Paul is once again tried in Caesarea before the governor of the province. Verse number 6. And when he had tarried among them more than 10 days, he went down unto Caesarea, and the next day, sitting on the judgment seat, commanded Paul to be brought. So Luke notes here that Festus spent about 10 days in Jerusalem. As a new governor, he obviously had more business to attend to than Paul's case. Festus takes up Paul's case, he says, though, after arriving back in Caesarea. In fact, the day after he arrives back in Caesarea, he takes up Paul's case. So surely by this time, He has reviewed the case. He's reviewed the records. He's brought up to speed about where things stand currently. And he's taking here a quick action. The day after he gets back, he's going to hear this case. It probably indicates that he wants to resolve this case that has been left over from the previous administration. It's been a long-standing case that's basically sort of been at a stalemate. Now, Luke also notes here that the day after he arrived, that he sat on the judgment seat and he issued an order for Paul to be brought. So in other words, Luke is indicating to us here that this amounts to a legal trial. Paul is now being summoned. This is going to form a legal trial. Paul's second in the city of Caesarea. Verse number 7. And when he was come, the Jews which came down from Jerusalem stood round about and laid many and grievous complaints against Paul, which they could not prove. So the Jewish leaders had come to Caesarea for the purpose of making this accusation, and they accused Paul before the governor Festus. Luke notes that they had many accusations and that they were serious charges. Now this time, they do not seem to have brought an attorney with them like they did the time before to make their case. Rather, they are making their charge, it seems, in more of a group effort, supposing to have greater force. Now, Luke does not give us the exact charges. And likely one of the reasons for that is that they were the same as before. Before, they had charged Paul in Caesarea with being an enemy of public peace and order, with causing riots among the Jews throughout the empire, as being a ringleader of an illegal sect of Nazarenes, and also of having attempted to defile the temple. And again, these were all serious charges. Could they be proven and substantiated? Now, Festus would later go on to say, when he's talking to Agrippa in this chapter, he will later go on to say that they didn't charge Paul as he expected, and their complaints revolved around questions of Jewish law, which was the, you remember, was the conclusion that Lysias came to, the chief captain there in Jerusalem, when he transferred him to Felix in Caesarea. But Luke makes a note here in this verse, at the end of verse 7, which they could not prove. Now, given the legal setting of what is going on and the language that is being used, as I understand it, which is using legal terms and legal procedure, he's saying, when he says they did not prove or that they could not prove, in other words, he's saying they failed at proving their charges with any sort of legal proofs that would be admissible by Roman law. So he's not saying that they didn't try. They apparently did try to make their case against Paul the best that they could. However, they failed to be able to bring any sort of proof that would be credible according to Roman law. And of course, that sort of ties Festus' hands. He's not able to take action against Paul without any sort of a legal claim being substantiated. So one of the things that tells us is after 2 years' time, they had not been able to make their case any stronger against Paul than what it was to begin with. Verse number 8. While he answered for himself, neither against the law of the Jews, neither against the temple, nor yet against Caesar, have I offended anything at all. So Luke is noting Paul's response, and he's probably giving this here in a legal summary form. The defense that Paul makes addresses the charges from the previous trial, and those were probably reiterated at this trial. He claims that he had not committed any offense against the law of the Jews, nor against the temple, nor against Caesar. Now, an offense against Caesar would amount to a charge of treason. So that would be a charge that we haven't exactly seen to this point. So whether that was a new charge that they brought against him in an effort to try to have action taken against him, it's not detailed for us anywhere. Now, this could have been in connection with the charge of Paul causing riots among the Jews throughout the empire. And it could be that was unsubstantiated because that, again, came down to debates about Jewish law and customs. But either way, Paul claims his innocence of any of these charges. Verse number 9. But Festus, willing to do the Jews a pleasure, answered Paul and said, "Wilt thou go up to Jerusalem and there be judged of these things before me?" Festus obviously at this point does not know how to proceed, which he admits later when he is talking to Agrippa. Luke notes that he wanted to show some favor to the Jews, but he can't declare Paul guilty since no charges have been proven against him. That would make him liable for action from the Roman emperor. He offers Paul the opportunity to go to Jerusalem. Presumably that means to be tried before Festus and the council of the Sanhedrin. He offers Paul this. In other words, he gives Paul this as an option. He doesn't command Paul to do this. He has no legal grounds to turn Paul over to the Jews, to move him to Jerusalem, and to have him tried there. So he simply offers this as an option to Paul. Not sure what his motivation was, other than the fact that he doesn't appear really to know how to proceed. Verse 10, then said Paul, "I stand at Caesar's judgment seat, where I ought to be judged. To the Jews have I done no wrong, as thou very well knowest." So Paul refuses this request. Obviously, he viewed this change of venue for his trial as a desire on the part of Festus to hand him over to the Jews. Handing him over to the Jews would be the same thing as amounting to a death sentence, because he knows he's not going to have a fair trial there. He's not willing to concede to the Jews, for he's done nothing against them, and they have no case or jurisdiction over him. So Paul says, "I'm standing here at Caesar's judgment seat." In other words, he's using a legal argument here. As a Roman citizen, I ought to be tried by a Roman court, which is where I am. I've done nothing against the Jews, as I have proclaimed, and as they have failed to substantiate that I have done anything against them, anything worthy of any sort of criminal prosecution. Verse 11, Paul continues, "For if I be an offender, or have committed anything worthy of death, I refuse not to die. But if there be none of these things whereof these accuse me, no man may deliver me unto them. I appeal unto Caesar." So Paul is here arguing on the basis of Roman law. He is refusing this on legal grounds. So again, handing him over to the Jews would be the same thing as giving him a death sentence. He's equating those two as he argues before Festus. To hand a Roman citizen over to the Jews to be executed when they had no charges proven against him would be an illegal action for Festus, the governor of the Roman province, to take. And so Paul then concludes by appealing to Caesar as a Roman citizen. He obviously did not expect justice from Festus, and he did not want to return to Jerusalem. Verse 12. Then Festus, when he had conferred with the council, answered, "Hast thou appealed unto Caesar? Unto Caesar shalt thou go." An appeal to Caesar was a right to all Roman citizens. Now, it says that Festus conferred here with his council on the matter. And what I understand historically, according to Roman law, a Roman citizen had a right to appeal to Caesar, ultimately going up to the highest court. But an appeal did not have to be granted. And that, which is the same way in our legal system today, an appeal can be filed, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it will be granted. It has to be established. So an appeal doesn't have to be granted. If Festus and his council confer and they don't find grounds for this appeal, then it doesn't have to be granted. Also, an appeal could be made, but the costs of that appeal had to be borne by the one who was making the appeal. So in other words, just because an appeal was made, first of all, that didn't mean it would be granted. And second of all, if it was granted, it didn't mean that it would happen, because the one appealing would have to pay the cost. In other words, Paul makes an appeal to Caesar, and that means he has to first of all rely on Felix, under whose jurisdiction he currently is. He's going to have to, or Festus rather, he's going to have to rely on Festus granting that appeal. And then second of all, he's going to have to pay. So he's going to have to pay for his travel. He's going to have to pay for whatever all the associated costs are getting him to Rome and having this trial to take place. But the appeal gave Festus the easiest way out of a very difficult situation that he was in. For instance, what could Festus do? If he handed Paul over to the Jews, he certainly would probably have trouble with Rome, because he had no legal grounds for doing so. Paul was in the jurisdiction of a Roman court and a Roman governor. And in essence, he would be handing him over to a lower and lesser court to be tried, which almost certainly would end in his death one way or another. And that would cause him trouble with the emperor. If he released Paul because he was innocent, which is pretty well been established. I mean, legally, his innocence has been established, and there's no reason for him to continue to be tried and continue to be imprisoned. But if he released Paul because he was innocent, he certainly would have trouble with the Jews. That is not the way that he would want to start his time in office. If he transferred Paul to Rome, which was also an option that he had, he could say that this case, I'm transferring it to the emperor. I've gone as far as I can go with it. If he transferred Paul to Rome by his own decision, then he could also have trouble with the Jews. So ultimately, Paul making an appeal, it presents the easiest course of action for Festus. And Festus, by the end of this verse, has conferred with his council, and he has granted that appeal. That means that Paul, though he is still in custody, and he will remain in custody in order until he can be transferred, but nevertheless, the decision of his case is now out of the hands of Festus. It's out of the hands of the Jews. In fact, it's out of the hands of Agrippa. It can be decided only by the emperor at this point. So as we think about this, as this continues to unfold, Paul has been now 2 years in prison, and as we've seen since the time that he was arrested, one of the things you'll notice in these accounts is that Paul continues to be surrounded. He continues to be surrounded by enemies, but surrounded by those that have competing motives and desires that could, on the one hand, leave him as a prisoner. In other words, Paul could simply just rot in jail, so to speak, here in Caesarea. He could simply just die of natural causes, living out the rest of his life in jail in Caesarea without anything being decided in his case. Or he could also be handed over to the Jews and be certainly executed, whether through a legal proceeding with the Sanhedrin or whether by being caught in a conspiracy to kill him by the Jews. So what does Paul do? Or what is Paul to do? Well, Paul trusts in Jesus. Remember that he appeared unto him earlier, told him that his mission in Jerusalem had been accomplished, and that he must also testify in Rome. So in other words, we don't read that Paul has a lot of legal counsel. We don't know what all that Paul may be thinking. But Paul didn't know the exact route, but Paul obviously believed that he would get to Rome. And Paul is obviously trying to get to Rome. And again, that's because of the direction that has been given to him by the Lord. Now, we have nothing in the text that tells us that the Lord told Paul to appeal to Caesar. And I don't believe that that is the case. But the Lord had told him that he had accomplished his witness in Jerusalem, and he must bear witness also in Rome. And so that means that Paul's actions are calculated toward getting him to Rome. So once again, as a church, we have a mission from Jesus Christ to preach his gospel to all people. We're not told that we must bear witness in Rome in the way that Paul was or what have you. But just as Paul, in a difficult circumstance in which he was not given many options at all or decisions to make, but still yet in a very difficult circumstance, we see that Paul's clear command from Jesus Christ was a driving force. In other words, how he was thinking about what was going on, how he was trying to proceed, and what he was going to do with whatever options that were given him, those were decided for Paul by the mission he had been given from Jesus Christ. And I'm saying that a church is in a very similar situation. That there is a mission from Jesus Christ to preach the gospel to all people. And likewise, that should be a driving force in decisions that are made, in strategies that are made, in the way that a church responds to challenges or to persecutions or whatever that it is. So the gospel of Jesus Christ was a central factor in the life of Paul. And he's trying to get to Rome one way or another. If he goes there as a prisoner, he's happy to go there. He's just trying to get there. So again, I do believe that we see direction for a church having that gospel center and focus. That this is our responsibility to preach the gospel to all people. Wherever that may be, and how that should form and shape the things that we do and the decisions that we make and the responses that we have to difficulties as well.